Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY21 earnings conference call of Praj Industries Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Hatkamkar from Praj Industries. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good day, everyone. We welcome you to this conference call organized to discuss Praj Industries' operating performance and financial results of Q4 and FY21, which were announced yesterday. On this call, I have with me Mr. Shishir Joshipura, CEO and Managing Director, and Mr. Sachin Raole, CFO and Director of Finance and Commercial. Before we begin, I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve certain risks and uncertainties. Documents relating to our financial performance were emailed to you. These documents, along with quarterly result presentation, have also been posted on our corporate website. I would now like to hand over the floor to Mr. Joshipura for his opening remarks.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome you to Praj Industries' earnings call for Q4 and FY21. Trust all of you had the opportunity to go through our results presentation for the quarter and year ended 31st March 2021. It is once again a pleasure to connect with all of you. I hope all of you are doing well and staying safe during these unprecedented times. I'm sure you are all observing the prescribed guidelines by healthcare authorities and keeping yourself safe. I also hope most of you are in the process of securing vaccines, if not already vaccinated. It is a very essential measure that will help us win fight against the COVID-19 virus. Let me now briefly take you through the results and overview of the external environment. I will take you through the quarterly business highlights, industry developments, following which Sachin will take you through the financials. The external business environment continued developing positively for most parts of the quarter, even as we braced ourselves for the impact of the second wave of pandemic towards the end of the quarter. We have learned to work and live in partially lockdown environment, and there is a broader sense that the economic impact due to restrictions and lockdowns could be moderate compared to impact of the first wave last year. Different state governments have announced lockdown measures in varying degree and tougher restrictions on mobility. In complete compliance with the directives, we have temporarily closed operations to our corporate office in Pune. Our employees continue to serve our customers working from home. However, our manufacturing plants, R&D activities, and sites have continued to function with all due precautions in accordance with the directives from the local authorities. We are better prepared this time compared to last year, with significant reduction in number of unknowns and a much better aligned processes and workflows. As an organization, we are significantly healthier with much higher visibility on demand cycle, operation, etc. A normal monsoon forecast for 2021, along with timely harvesting of rabi crops, could further entail a healthy agricultural season given remunerative crop prices and healthy water reservoir levels, thus boding well for the overall economy. Coming to the bioenergy front, in the domestic markets, the center's efforts on expanding the country's ethanol blending program through supportive regulations and measures continues to drive the demand for ethanol to higher levels, giving boost to capacity expansion in the center. The current blending level for ethanol in India has crossed 7.4% in the first 5 months of the ethanol supply year 2020-21. This is the highest ever recorded ethanol blending level at an all-India basis. Since 2014, we have witnessed the government progressively building upon the country's EBP program, registering an almost 4x jump in ethanol blending levels in the last 8 years. The government has recently announced advancing of EBP 20 targets by 5 years from 2030 to 2025. This is expected to create a demand of additional 10 billion liters of ethanol per annum. move to encourage ethanol production, the government further expanded the permissible feedstock by adding starchy feedstocks to the list in the form of surplus aids. A robust and remunerative ethanol pricing model, along with the interest subvention scheme, is building a good momentum in creation of ethanol production capacity across the country. To further boost the production of ethanol, states are taking proactive steps aligned to Government of India's National Biofuel Policy 2018. States of Bihar and Chhattisgarh have introduced state-specific ethanol production policy to attract investment in the sector. The recent move to allow the direct sale of ethanol as a fuel for compatible automobiles is further expected to support this demand. Like petrol and diesel, it is now allowed to sell E100 directly to compatible vehicles. Raj's own thinking on advancing the sustainable transportation is reflected in our bio-mobility platform is very much aligned to this thought process. This policy will further add to building up the opportunities for distillery capacity expansion and extended fuel usage across the nation. The basic change that is being brought about with expansion of the feedstock away from only molasses seed to expand the sugar-based feedstock itself, plus the starchy feedstock in form of different grains and the cellulosic biomass, all these three put together are likely to change fundamentally the industry structure, which was either too dependent on a single feedstock base and a few location-based output, to a multiple feedstock round the year across the country production level. And this is likely to change the industry structure substantially as we move forward. On the CBG front, in the domestic market, we are seeing positive traction developing. There has been now a notification that has earmarked that CBG produce can now be mixed directly into the CBG networks, and I think that's a very big positive step forward for the evacuation of the gas, and we expect that this and further measures will help to build the overall ecosystem for CBG, which will help develop this business over the midterm. The RED II directive rollout in Europe that we've been talking about, it is now around the corner, and later this summer in Europe they will be rolled out, and this is expected to drive creation of cellulosic ethanol capacity over the next decade. World Economic Forum constituted an initiative called Clean Skies for Tomorrow, of which Praj is also one of the members, and it submitted its recommended report to the government for advancing the development of sustainable aviation fuel in India. We expect sustainable aviation to become an important part of biofuel basket in the country over 5 years or so. Let me now take you through the highlights and the developments for the quarter. Overall, we believe we have delivered an encouraging and robust performance. The growth in Q4 was built on top of a momentum that we saw in the last quarter, led by the bioenergy and engineering businesses. We have also seen robust order booking this quarter and ended the quarter with a closing order backlog of 1,748 crores as on March 31st, 2021, thus setting the stage for a promising FY22. Our bioenergy business returned a strong performance, reflected in increased business wins. We are seeing development of robust inquiries and leads across different feedstocks in the domestic market. Praj Technology was selected to set up India's largest capacity syrup-based ethanol plant from Godavari biorefineries in Karnataka. As part of this project, Praj will expand the existing ethanol manufacturing to 600 KLPD using sugarcane syrup. When commissioned, this will become India's largest capacity syrup-based ethanol plant. The expansion will maintain zero liquid discharge amounts by deploying Praj's patented shift technology developed in our state-of-the-art R&D facility at Praj Matrix. The shift technology is maximizing value for customers by minimizing water and energy footprint. Over the last 1 year, the domestic market saw a contracted capacity addition for setting up of 100 crore liters per annum of ethanol. So we contracted for setting up 100 crore liters of ethanol capacity, and Praj is at the forefront of building this capacity as we move forward. On the international front, the challenge posed by the pandemic impeded development dialogue in several economies, and the travel restrictions led to an extended timeline for market building activities. The impact of COVID and travel restrictions thus has hampered some of these activities as we move through the year. As the COVID crisis begins to taper down, we are now experiencing restart of the pause dialogues on capacity build-up and expansion in international markets. We also expect that at the back of the U.S. returning to programs will come to the forefront and will present a new business opportunity for us. On the 2G front, execution of the first three plants in the country is on course. Equipment installation has started at the IOCL Panipat project. The mechanical completion of the site is expected in second quarter of calendar year 22. We expect to commission this plant in third quarter of the calendar year 22. In Europe, Cellunity, our latest offering along with CCAR, is finding good traction in forest residue to ethanol space, especially in Nordic regions, and inquiries are progressing very constructively on this front. On the CBG front, we bagged the prestigious breakthrough order from HPCL during the quarter for setting up the CBG project at Badaun in Uttar Pradesh. Raj is offering its state-of-the-art RenGas process to produce CBG from rice straw using proprietary microbes. The project has a capacity to process 35,000 metric tons of rice straw as feedstock and will generate over 5,000 metric tons of CBG annually. In addition, the project will also generate 23,000 metric tons of high-quality solid biomanure and over 35,000 metric tons of liquid biomanure for fertilization. The project has the potential to save over 15,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions per year. We have received a contract for setting up a CBG project for a distillery spent wash in Western India with a capacity to produce 10 metric tons of gas per day. Praj is very proud to have backed projects for CBG development from three independent and highest potential feedstocks, namely press mud, dry straw, and distillery spent wash. Through these projects, we are contributing towards the Satat initiative with an objective to promote CBG as a clean, sustainable, and affordable fuel. As I speak with you, we have also commenced the final stages of commissioning of India's first 200 TPD press mud bagasse-based CBG project at our customer, the plant based in Uttar Pradesh. The ecosystem for the CBG is continuing to develop, and we do hope that over a period of time, the system will develop and become a robust system just the way ethanol system is over a period of time. As for engineering and PHS business, they have started to witness healthy trend in their chosen market segments, and we expect that momentum to strengthen as we move ahead through the year. The zero liquid discharge water business, the IOCL project execution has commenced, and we also backed some key orders during the quarter. And what was very heartening for us is that many of these contracts are repeat orders from our marquee customers, which actually goes to prove that our solutions are finding increasing acceptance with the customers. On the CPES front, with the global technology and EPC player, and we expect from several of these accounts. The brewery business, the domestic market has continued to be on status quo with no new capacity being put, bar one brownfield expansion, which we are building. We expect domestic demand to return based on the development on the pandemic front. We are beginning to see an increased activity in Africa and expect that our efforts will pave way for a constructive development in a new financial year for brewery business in African market. On the PHS front, we are witnessing increased activity level in entire complex injectable and vaccine space. These are the two spaces where we had positioned our solution very strongly over a period of time. We are now partnering in supplying of critical equipment to several leading players in the COVID vaccine development program. We also see an encouraging development on inquiries from the international front, laying the platform for a strong growth of this business. On the operations front, a continued and steep rise in input commodity costs, coupled with issues arising out of the pandemic-related migration, does pose challenge in smooth and trouble-free execution, but our teams are focused on ensuring that we iron out those wrinkles as we move ahead. We are carefully monitoring business environment for any demand-side corrections owing to the pandemic situation, although we see no signs of that as of now. We will continue to take all measures to identify risks and their mitigation, ensuring continuity of operations, safety of our people, and continue to do our bit in fights to defeat the pandemic. On the whole, our research, innovation, focus-led, customer-centric strategy, coupled with very progressive and sustainability-focused policy environment, has helped build a strong platform for driving company's future growth. Before we close, I would like to share, in line with our dividend payout strategy, the board of directors has recommended a final dividend of rupees 2.16 per share for FY21. With this, I will now hand over to Sachin for his comment on the financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Shishir. The consolidated income from operations stood at rupees 567.1 crore in Q4 FY21 as compared to 296.29 crore in Q4 FY20. PBT for the quarter stood at rupees 73.19 crore as compared to 31.67 crore in the corresponding period last year. Profit after tax stood at 52.01 crore in Q4 FY21 as compared to 24.86 crore in Q4 FY20. For the full year ended March 31, 21, operations stood at 1,304.67 crore as against 1,102.37 crore in FY20. PBT stood at rupees 113.11 crore as against 83.13 crore in FY20. And PAT for FY21 came in at rupees 81.07 crore as against 70.43 crore in FY20. The contribution margin for the quarter has shown drop of 2.3% as compared to the last quarter. This is mainly because of the sales mix for this quarter, mainly the higher turnover from domestic business, which is almost 72% as compared to the 69%, and some impact of increase in the input cost. Similarly, contribution margin for the year has also seen some kind of an impact as compared to the last year. The reason being, in the last year, we executed high number of service export orders as compared to the current year. Effective tax rate for the year stood at 28.33%, 15% of the last year. This year, we are coming normal tax regime as compared to the last years where we were in the MAT regime. Additionally, the increase in the rate is because of recognition of deferred tax liability on account of certain SEZ benefits, which will not be accruing in the next year. Looking at the complete utilization of MAT credit now and some benefits of R&D spend and SEZ sales, which are going in the fog taper down, our effective tax rate is expected to be in the range of 26% to 28%. Export revenues accounted for 28% for Q4 FY21. And of the total revenue, 70% is from bioenergy, 22% is from engineering, and 8% is from PHS business. The order intake during the quarter was 650 crore, with 84% from domestic market. Of the total order intake, 84% came from bioenergy, 8% from engineering, and balance 8% from PHS business. The order backlog stands at 1,748 crore at the end of March 21, comprising of 85% of domestic orders. Cash in hand as on 31st of March stood at rupees 476 crores. With this, I will conclude my remark. Thank you all for joining. We would now be happy to discuss any questions, comments or suggestions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Credence Wealth. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations, Raj team, for a wonderful set of numbers. Sir, I have two questions. First one is with regards to, you mentioned about the CBG plant in the North India being now operational. And you had mentioned in the previous call that North India was supposed to start in April and the Southern India plant was supposed to start in somewhere around June. And based on the working, how the plant is working, what is the customer response, how the entire ecosystem is developing, you see further inquiries coming in. So with regards to this first plant, which has now been operational, if you could share some feedback as per how the plant is functioning, what is the customer response, and does it, you know, give you an indication now that probably more and more inquiries which could get converted now into orders coming in much sooner than what probably you would have expected earlier? That is question number one with regards to CBG. And second is with regards to, sir, the commodity costs which have gone up. and they continue to move up in last 3-4 months also further. And so how could this impact? We have not any impact probably in March, though our gross margins have come down. But do you see this impacting going ahead in, say, next 2-3 quarters to come? If you could share something on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Manoj. As I was mentioning, the IPL commissioning has started. And early days for me to comment yet on its impact in the market, etc. We are expecting, but I think we have to give some time. People would also like to see performance for a brief period of time before one concludes. But right now, as far as technology is concerned, we are moving in the right direction. And we expect that we will soon be able to establish the full performance because it takes, it gradually builds up over a period of time. That is how the nature of the gas plant is. So it is on track and developing well. We have also learned lots of lessons on around what needs to be done on the ecosystem. We've been working very closely with all marketing companies, with the city gas distribution companies, with the customer, with the logistics providers. And it's been a great input that we have and learning that we have received. And we will be able to, and we, I must say that everybody has been responding very constructively and positively. And as the things go forward, probably this is too early for me to comment on whether we're starting to see a flow of inquiries based on this particular plant. So that's early days for that. But over a period of time, we do expect that things would happen. And the ecosystem development here in Kuvans will help some of the other customers to also witness and make up their mind. Moving on to the commodity question that you got, yes, the steam price hike is uniformly impacting everybody. So there are two dimensions to it. On the new jobs, when we go and bid, we can definitely factor that in, you know, at that moment in time as to what the price is, although they have been really rising at a more rapid rate than one would expect for different factors. On our existing jobs, it is going to create some impact, no question. Because as we execute and if during the execution itself, stage itself, the costs go up, then they will have some impact. But we have, our team is very focused, very alert. And we are taking measures to see how we can mitigate the cost of raw material rise, because there's also a lot other costs that we have to manage. So finding a balance between the two is a challenge. But yes, it does pose a challenge as we move forward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Balchandra Shinde from Max Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Sir, in our order book regarding bioenergy, if you can specify what will be our execution cycle and ethanol plant related, how much orders will be there?
So, Balchandra, the execution cycle has not changed. It is exactly the same what it used to be. Because there's no change that has taken place in terms of any of the factors that would impact the execution cycle. So it remains unaltered between 9 to 12 months, of course, depending on the customer's readiness as well. So it will continue to be in that direction. Sachin, you want to give out a number on bioenergy versus engineering mix?
Sure, I can give that number. Are you interested in understanding the closing numbers, the breakup of 748 crores? So I can tell you the number will be around 1,000 plus crores in the bioenergy segment, around 500 crores will be in the engineering segment, and 115 crores in PHS.
Isn't it to install an ethanol plant? It requires in the range of around 12 to 18 months. How our execution cycle is in between 9 to 12 months.
I think Balchandra, the question is from whose perspective? So if I'm the promoter of the project, what you're saying is right, because I need to go for an environmental clearance before I start out order out my plant. So it does take between 6 to 9 months to get those regulatory approvals in. Sometimes it can be as long as 12 months. But I'm talking about orders on hand. Once I have the order, then the EC is already exists. So from our perspective, it should be 9 to 12 months. But you're correct that if somebody is putting a project, maybe they will take a longer cycle. No question.
And just on the historical part and right now, if we see from 2016 till now, actually capacity-wise, mostly ethanol capacity has quadrupled, I think, from 2016. But our sales were not increasing. But now, actually, the capacity addition is there, and we are seeing a jump in order book. What exactly there is a change than historical in current?
So I think there are two or three factors that we need to take into consideration here. One is that there is a definitive program for improving the ethanol blend in the country. And a clear realization that the demand, which has been now freighted out, the oil companies have come out with a tender of 5 years, right? They have already told what the demand is likely to be for the 5 years. That they've already, before the E20 was announced, even before that, they had given out a very significant visibility to what is the requirement going to be, and the capacity is short of that. So obviously, then capacities will be built based on the demand supply gap. That is number one. Number two, and I think that's an important parameter, is also to understand that if we go to E20, then we are looking at a very different kind of a cycle, because as you would know, that today most of the ethanol is produced in just three states of Uttar Pradesh, Maharashtra and Karnataka. But with the change in the policy on the grain side, by including the starchy feedstock, if we can put a broader name to this, so there is sugary feedstock, which is all the sugar companies are the natural owners, and they'll continue to build capacities based on that because of the dynamics that happens in the sugar business. On the other hand, the starchy feedstock actually distributes the production of ethanol across the country in every state, because grain and starchy feedstocks are available across through the FCI godowns in the country. If that is what is happening, then the ethanol capacities will come up in different parts of the country, which will lead to an overall improvement in the blending ratios, because today a lot of logistics distances and management has to be done to move ethanol from three states to multiple states. That is the next one. Then the third dimension that will come into play is, so we looked at what's happening in the sugary part, we looked at what's happening at the production capacity expansion, and the third dimension that will work in the industry structure itself is undergoing a change. Right? If you look at it from the perspective of let's just take 24 months ago, and almost entire production of ethanol in the country was based on sugar. If you stop the sugar mills were natural owners, and they will continue to do so. The dynamics on the sugar side has changed. The export subsidies going away, surplus sugar production, very good agricultural crops, so, and the freeing up of the feedstocks. So if you look at all of these, apart from all the other financial measures that got announced, then that is driving a dynamic on the sugar segments to set up capacities based on syrup, molasses D, move away from molasses C. And what fundamentally means is more and more sugar is now getting diverted for production of ethanol. It is also a very high value additive activity for the sugar mills. So that's one dimension. The starchy feedstock, on the other hand, will bring in a whole host of new set of promoters, if I can use that word, for the project. You can imagine we have inquiries from developers of large solar capacities, because for them it is a model by which you create a commodity, which is electricity. Now you create a commodity called ethanol based on a policy that is or the directives that are available in the system ecosystem. So we will see a completely new set of players also emerge. It could be OMCs, it could be developers, it could be renewable energy focused developers, renewable energy focused funds. So this could be very different set of people who will walk in, because the starchy feedstocks actually opens up the whole economy to a very different set of dynamics. And that's what is going to happen in India. But not only in India, we are seeing this movement across the world in several economies, and where we are expecting, of course, United States walking back into the Paris Agreement is a big, big push, a positive push in the direction. We are seeing a lot of activity emerging out of Canada, where they have announced a very ambitious ethanol blending program. We see constructive developments taking place in different economies on this side, and many governments waking up to the idea that maybe this is a good solution for us to address our energy needs. Sorry, a bit of a long-winded answer, but I hope that I answered your question.
Sir, just to last question. Last year, we had a closing order book of around 1,000 crore, and we ended FY 2021 at around 1,300 crore. Right now, we have around 1,700 crore. Can we expect sales of around 2,000 crore by FY 2022 end, or how much can be the sales target on your end?
Well, all I would say is this. I have no idea what the equation in your Excel sheet forecast is, but you can put it together and it will show you some part. So, yeah, we'll have to see. There are factors to be, as I was mentioning, there are, we are assuming that the business environment will remain largely unimpected with this second COVID wave, which is what the indications currently are. We have to still wait and see. Our focus is to, as I mentioned, is to increase the throughput of our systems and execute the plans very effectively and very at a fast pace. Also, in a very major change that we will witness as we move forward from here, as we were mentioning, is that while the sugary feedstock-based plants are seasonal in nature, so there is some seasonality into the execution cycle. The grain-based plant or the starchy feedstock-based plants, they do not have such a seasonality built into their requirements. So we will see a very different dynamic layout as we move forward. All favorable.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address questions from all participants, we would request you to please restrict your questions to two at a time. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikram Suryavanshi from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon, sir, and congratulations for strong performance. First question is basically for how is this progress of around more than 400 projects which are there for interest subvention. Are we seeing the traction with this tripartite agreement, or are still there facing some financial funding issues?
Vikram, thank you so much. I think as I was mentioning, the industry structure is undergoing a fundamental change. And it's no longer just a sugar-based ethanol production story. We are going to see a lot more starchy feedstock-based capacities that's coming in these four-based plants that you lead to. The way we will see it is that first our inquiry levels have to start going up, and that is definitely happening. Our order book has to start building with different feedstocks. That's definitely happened. And for us, the good news is that for us, the starchy feedstock is a story that we have built outside India for many years. So we have tremendous experience into building of these plants and their performance. So we expect that experience will come to good help for our customers to now start building world-class plants in India based on starchy feedstock as well. So we are seeing very positive development. Our inquiry levels have more than doubled on the starchy feedstock side, probably more than quadrupled as well. So we are expecting good and constructive traction on that part.
Okay. And second question about this increasing the landscape under bio-mobility, particularly opportunities in aviation fuel or methanol as a fuel for coastal shipping or inland waterways. Typically, who will put up this kind of capacity, or existing ethanol players can, with some modification to the equipment, can supply that, or if you can highlight that, and how our tie with GEO is playing out for global market for aviation fuel?
Great question, Vikram. So on the sustainable aviation fuel side, our technology that we are working with GEO for, which we have co-developed with them, with a specific focus on the India market, and since we understood the dynamics here, it is an alcohol to jet fuel route, as it is called ATJ, alcohol to jet. So our effort is that tomorrow, if the market were to start expanding for the sustainable aviation fuel, and as we know that there is no electric alternative there on that front, right? You can't have electricity powered aircraft flying around. So for them to overcome the climate change problem and greenhouse gas emission issue, they will have to shift to the industry will have to shift to sustainable fuels. And there, the alcohol to jet route will play a very big role, because in India, as we have mapped, and I mentioned about that report as well, Green Skies for Tomorrow, the route of alcohol to jet actually utilizes the current infrastructure that we have so strongly in place with our sugar mills, the ethanol production plants that are set up with them, the grain-based plants that will come up. All of them will become the feeder plants, so it will be different, the molecule of alcohol. That will be produced in these plants, and it's a two-stage process, and then the refineries will refine that alcohol to the aviation fuel step. So two-stage process, but very, very, very aligned to what our current infrastructure is, and we are developing this technology with a view that our existing customers should be able to accommodate and with minimal modifications and start producing the required alcohol variant as and when the opportunity opens up.
Got it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Viraj Mehta from Majama Investment. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on the excellent set of results. Firstly, if you can help me with the quantify the target market size currently and how it will evolve in the coming years. And if you can break that up from between sugar and starchy feedstock.
Sorry, is your question what is going to be the sugary feedstock based ethanol production versus starchy? Is that the question?
Yeah, I wanted to understand, what is the current target market size and how it will evolve in the coming years.
All
if you can break it up between feedstock.
Okay. All right. So, as I said, if we have to meet the EBP 20 target by 2025, we have to add 1,000 crore liter of capacity into the system. Nearly 60% and thereabout, so you can say 2/3, 60% to 2/3 in that range will come from starchy feedstocks, and 1/3 will come from sugary feedstocks. This additional capacity.
Sure. So what is the current payback period for the customer based on starchy feedstock?
Sorry, I couldn't get the question.
What is the current payback for a customer starting the starchy feedstock production?
There are factors. For example, the land cost, the proximity to the market, the cost of capital to an organization, which is different from different people. The capacity itself of the plant, if you put up a larger capacity plant, obviously it is more attractive payback period. So it varies. It could vary. In some cases, it could be 3 years, and it could be 5 years of that order. Depends on different factors. Yeah.
Okay. Lastly, on capital allocation front, how do you perceive the excess capital considering we are having strong free cash and idle cash on the balance sheet?
Sorry, could you please repeat the question? I couldn't catch it.
Yeah, how do you perceive excess capital on the balance sheet, considering we are having strong free cash and idle cash on the balance sheet?
So, I think first of all, we are very happy that we are in a situation that we have cash on balance sheet and we are not looking at raising any debt of any kind, number one. Number two, as I was mentioning, as we move forward, a lot of development will take place on the biomobility platform itself. I think one of the previous questions was around what happens to biomethanol, what happens to sustainable aviation fuels, and a lot more that we already laid out the platform for. So we have to see what kind of investments we will need to put on the technology side to be able to be ready for driving the change, for making it happen and being at the forefront of it, which has been our legacy so far. So I think we have to have a judicious understanding of what kind of expenses we need over what period of time, and we will take the correct call on that with respect to that. So,
and Viraj, if I may add,
yes, sorry.
Viraj, if I may add, I'm Sachin here. The projects are also under execution, so we have to execute all the order book of 1800 crores which we are sitting on. And naturally on the basis of payment terms, we have received the advances against those. So naturally it will go, some portion will go for working capital also for that matter. So what Shishir mentioned is on the investment on the capital side. But second thing which we'll have to also keep on investing into working capital, which will be requiring for the execution of these projects.
Sure. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, we would request participants to please limit your question to few at a time. The next question is from the line of Achal Lohade from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, sir. My question was, in terms of the capacity, what is the capacity today, total distillery capacity in India, and how much of that is based on, grain and sugar, respectively, please?
Are you asking what's the current installed capacity to different feedstock? Is that the question?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We can probably send you those information because I need to give an exact number on those. So because this depends on the feedstock that the companies have opted for, etc. So we can, but most of the capacity today on the ethanol side of the equation is sugary feedstock. Most of the capacity in India today is sugary feedstock because there was no policy around starchy-based ethanol production, starch-based feedstock and ethanol production thereof. So whatever production that we see today of sort of 350 crore liter, 400 crore liter, that is coming out of sugary feedstocks only. And today, the grain capacity that exists in the country is mostly used for potable and other higher-use alcohol and ethanol alcohol production.
Understood. And the second
now,
question in terms of...
It will change. But now it will change.
Certainly. And in terms of the capacity, those 400 plus applications which the government approved for the interest subvention, what kind of capacity do you see getting actually added given the issues they are facing, whether it is land or environmental clearance or the funding? What kind of capacity addition do you foresee in next, let's say, 3 years or so, sir? And how much of that would be sugar?
Let me put it like this. So if you look at the year that went by, year ending March 21, if you build all the capacity in the country, it will add nearly 100 crore liters to the country's kitty. Okay? 100 crore liters of capacity will get added, different feedstocks. Now, on the other hand, if we have to meet the EBP 20 program in 2025, we have to 1,000 crore liters. Okay, that's a second viewpoint for you.
Right.
We are going to add 100 of that. Maybe our competition adds, we are two-third market, so they will add 40 odd crore liters of their plants as well. So if we have to add another nearly eight-fold more capacity to this, and I said that most, we expect as we move forward, two-third of the capacity will be built around starchy feedstocks, and one-third will be built around sugar feedstocks. And and by the time we reach 23, when we would have, as I was mentioning earlier, we would have also proven on the ground the cellulosic ethanol for which we are building these three plants, so cellulosic feedstock-based ethanol. And I think that is when we will also start to take that notice, because that's a very, very different proposition, because that solves, and I was mentioning the RED II program in Europe, which is actually focused on cellulosic feedstock. So we will have to look at these different dimensions of how they play out. In India, only in India, we expect a lot more capacity to get built up based on starchy feedstocks and not on and little less on sugary feedstocks as we move forward. Already sugar is a very, very big base.
Fair point, sir. If I could ask one more, just a clarification, in terms of the blending, there is slight confusion in general in terms of, the existing vehicle, how much can they take without any, equipment issues or with certain replacements, how much can they take at best?
Pardon me, I will have to give a slightly long answer to this question, but so understand this. So I was attending a talk from the Brazilian authorities, and as you know that they are the leaders in this field in the world. They have demonstrated that they have gone up to 27% blend with no change. Okay, with no change in the vehicle, they've still gone to 27%. But that's what they have achieved. I'm saying, on the other hand, if you look at what is required to be achieved, there are two dimensions to this. Okay, one is when I blend, if I know, as I'm the automobile manufacturer, and if I know that the fuel is going to be E20, for example, if I know that fuel is going to be E20, I can then tune my engine at E20. What does E20 mean? E20 allows me to go to much higher compression ratios without the problem of knocking, because there is this great oxidation agent with a high octane number called ethanol present in the mix, which raises the whole mixture's ethanol octane number. But if I don't have that information, then I have designed my vehicle for E0, if I can use that word. Okay, that is for the normal petrol with a lower compression ratios. Because I know that if I go for high compression ratio, it will not, then I will not be able to operate my vehicle. So it's also a matter of striking of having a uniform availability of fuel across the country, designing a vehicle to that so that you can directly leverage the whole whole potential of the fuel that is available. In absence of that, you will have a vehicle which is designed for a fuel, which will work for nearly same fuel, but we may have some, may not be able to scale up to the best possible performance level, which may be better than what it is currently. So that's one dimension. Second is, I think up to E15, at least for sure, there is no change that may be required in most of the vehicles. And I'm saying this based on my knowledge of my past job, that may not be required. Beyond 15-20, there may be some changes in the gasket, etc., that may be required, but no fundamental change that may be called for, unless you redesign the vehicle to take advantage of this higher octane number, etc.
Understood. This is very helpful, sir. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhagesh Pagalkar from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes,
two questions. One is on the RPM opportunity. Can you throw more light? It's in the long. And secondly, on the CBG front, now in blending of ethanol, a lot of traction. On the CBG front, what is the inflection point now that we have set up the first CBG plant? That government starts talking of big numbers on CBG plants all over India.
So, Bhagesh, great questions, as usual. RCM, I think we need to understand it in this is at different stages. So, the first part of the RCM is the co-products that will come out of our cellulosic ethanol system. Yes. Okay, the 2G plants that we are commissioning. And now, we have developed two very, very, and some more are in the pipeline, two very strong co-products that could be of great use for the country and for the industry. You know that we currently import, for example, we have developed a co-product called bitumen. Bitumen is completely imported today in India. Mm-hmm. But now we have developed a process that can take the lignin and valorize it to produce bitumen. And it is currently under testing. So when that happens, that becomes a very good source for country to substitute an imported product. Okay. There's another one called lignosulfonates that also we have developed. Today also we are importing entire quantity of lignosulfonate. Is a material that is used for concrete mixing. When you build concrete from cement, this is the element that actually holds the moisture and the cement together. So that allows the bonding to take place between water and cement in the different elements. So two examples I gave you, which will start to roll out. So there's a co-product cycle of RCM that will go out in the field and that will help our customers who are already existing as well as the new ones. There is a whole range of products that come out because we have been looking at microbial activity, we have been looking at our ability to look at different molecules, and there are products in the pipeline that will come to start to roll out, and there are a suite of them that will come out. And then, of course, there's a third one, the big frontier, which is what happens in the bioplastics and upper stages. So
different stages of development right now for different products, and we will keep talking about them at the appropriate time. That's on RCM. On CBG inflection point, I think as I said that we had to commission the first plant and run it successfully to understand the whole ecosystems. There's part of technology, but more than technology, I think also the how the rest of the elements of the ecosystem work, you know, the CGV system, the oil marketing companies, the retailing at the pumps, the vehicle population changeover, the how people will switch over from diesel to gas because there's a substantial price difference at the pump between the diesel and the gas, and so on. So there are different perspectives that will have to be built in. I think what's happening currently is, A, it is moving in the right direction. It is still early days to say, you know, we'll start to develop into the 1,75,000 crore opportunity that the government has eventually planned for. But I'm sure that this is a very important first step in that direction for us to demonstrate that it works. It works, and these are the financials, and that's how it works. And I'm sure that that is something that we will know during this quarter. Okay. And from there, we will build. So early days for CBG yet. Very promising outlook based on what has been announced so far at a very umbrella level. But I think we'll have to connect the ground reality to that and then see how it goes.
Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sujit Jain from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations, Prash team, for an excellent set of numbers. Shishirji, I had a few quick questions. CBG opportunity you just spelled out. What incentives would be needed to democratize it, you know, outside the oil and gas, refineries and marketing players? And in terms of risk, what happens when crude oil prices go down? If ethanol pricing is linked to crude, does that change the economics across cycles? Will the players, will they be able to make money? And what are your thoughts about terminal value of fossil fuels themselves? Because government at the same time is pushing EVs as well. Thank you.
All right. So let me start. So first and foremost, I think what's important is on the CBG side, as I was mentioning, the retailing of the energy at the automotive end in the country today is managed by oil marketing companies. And now we have a new set of players, especially in terms of the city gas distribution companies. And there's a big push, as you know, to set up the city gas distribution network. And I think that's a huge plus for CBG business as well. In a recent policy announcement, the government has said that this gas will be blended into the CGD network, and then the APM pricing network mechanism will take place of pricing at the end user end. So very clearly a push saying, no, we have to go sustainable. See, we are not a country that is levying a carbon tax or anything like that, but these are the policies through which you can actually ensure that the right kind of energy sources are put to use from the carbon perspective as well. Moving from ethanol to crude, in India, it has been clearly spelled out so far that the pricing of ethanol is not connected to the crude oil price. For two reasons, I think. One is, this is very farm community connected prices. Because what do we have in abundance? We have in abundance, and who is the larger stakeholder for us is the farmer and the agriculture producer. And we are not a country which has been gifted the crude oil reserves that you dig a hole and you find crude oil. That's not the case for us. So obviously our environment on the policy, our environment on the entire mechanism that is rolling out will have to get anchored itself around the agriculture dimension of the thing. And over a period of time, world over, crude oil is not going to be over a period of time. It's not a long-term fuel that everybody is betting because of the associated problems of GHG emission, etc. So far as it remains connected to the agriculture benefits and the farmer and feedstocks pricing there, I don't see a problem for ethanol in India at all. I think there's been more than enough indication and support and actual rollout in that direction. In terms of the vehicles, I think what we have to understand is that the I'm very happy that you asked this question. So we mentioned about a platform called BioMobility. What does it mean? What BioMobility platform says is that we should create sustainable fuels that will reduce the carbon footprint and will be sustainable in long term for the automotive vehicles. Now, if you look at biofuels, what is actually happening with biofuels is you are using existing infrastructure. You still use an IC engine, and I think it's a huge point that we need to take note of as a country. IC engine, I'm just taking a typical car, an IC engine based car has 17,000 parts. An electric car has 700. So remember, 700 versus 17,000. The 17,000 parts are made across, that is how the automotive value chain is. These are all part makers who make them. Today, we employ nearly 10 million people who are dependent on these parts being made. When you bring in biofuel, all of them stay in the supply chain, without exception. But if you bring an electric vehicle, most of them will vanish. One big news. So we don't want job destruction. We want job creation. We want the job protection. And we want value addition. So IC engines stay. You use the current infrastructure for distribution and retailing. So no big investment in that dimension. And most important, as I say, you don't change the user habit at all. I and you as users don't even notice this, right? We just go to the same petrol pump, we still fill it up, and we drive our vehicles. So it's not changing the user habits at all. And that's a big plus in favor of biofuels. On the other hand, will there be electric vehicles? Sure, there will be electric vehicles, and they will coexist. I was just reading a news today. If you take China out of the equation, the world, the total number of electric vehicles sold in the world last year was about 5 million or so. China is another half, so equals 10 million. If you compare it to the total vehicle production in the world, it's still a very minuscule number. It's rising fast because starting from zero. It will coexist. It will come into the play. It will have its own market. But for India, I think we need to ask different set of questions. We cannot do what Sweden or Finland can do. Our economic dimensions and compulsions are very different.
And one quick question is on technology. Is it all built in-house? Any royalty payments? And for future technology as well? Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't understand your question.
The technology is developed so far. Were they all in-house? Or there were some royalty payments, tie-ups, etc. And in future as well, the technologies that you are talking about, which will get developed. Any tie-ups, basically in terms of what is the impact on the P&L?
Let me answer by saying, first of all, we are extremely proud of the fact that we have our own R&D. We have a state-of-the-art R&D center, which is absolutely world-class and so recognized in the industry segments globally as well. And we have invested our time, effort, money, sweat, blood, tears, everything, our passion, our commitment into developing our own technologies, and that is what we have been rolling out in the marketplace. We also realize that as we go forward and more of an interaction takes place between different platforms like biology and chemistry, IT services and biology and so on, we cannot say that we know it all, so we'll have to collaborate, and I think that's a good way to grow for any organization, that we bring our strength to the table, somebody else's strength comes, and both put together becomes 1 plus 1 becomes 11. So that kind of collaboration, we already have quite a few, GO, CCAP, DVO, and we'll bring them to table, DVO, we'll bring them to table as and when it is required. And of course, if people bring their own technology, there will be a, what I would call it, common suited remuneration for all of them. None of them is going to be such that they'll impact our P&L or anything like that. To the contrary, by combining two technologies and bringing it forward to a better level, will actually be able to do better.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raj Rishi, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just wanted to find out, like, if you're talking about this opportunity being so big in ethanol and later on in CBG also, don't you think that a lot more players will come? So what's the moat which Praj would have? Can you just comment on that?
Okay. So if the opportunity is so big, and as I was saying, that surely competition can walk in, but
what we have invested in technology development, what we have invested into our customer relationship, and most important, what is our track record. That's not something that we will be able to copy overnight. At the same time, I always believe that the opportunity is big and some competition comes in is always good. Because that actually proves that the market is really expanding, it is attracting players, there are more people than us who are also seeing the same story that we are seeing. So I think from those perspectives, it's a good thing to happen. Competition also drives innovation, so that's a good thing to happen. But having said that, I think for anybody to come anywhere near what we are today, they will have to have an equal pedigree at the back end to be able to command equal, I would say, share or respect in the market. So no different. And we are very, very proud of what we have developed over a period of time.
Okay.
Not easy to copy.
Mm-hmm. And hello? Hello. Can I ask my second question?
Yes.
Yeah. So I had heard an interview of yours some maybe months ago in which you had talked about this incremental 1,000 crore liter which would be required for this 20% blending.
Yes.
In the next 4-5 years, of which, like you thought, you said the outlay would require around 1 lakh crore rupees, for mm-hmm. which Prudge, the addressable opportunity would be around 14,000 crores.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you expect that kind of order book for the next 4-5 years? And if so, like, when do you see the, the run rate improving to some to those kind of levels, if you can...
So Raj, we have begun to see, so those numbers are valid.
Hmm.
We have begun to see the traction being built. I was mentioning this in an earlier doubling the level of inquiry itself already. We are currently contracted to build 100 crore liters capacity in the country. So it will start to, and our numbers are reflective of that. So as the capacity starts to get built, now if it gets before, but if it gets built in 6, then it's divided by 6. So we'll have to see how that number plays out, but definitely we are very, very confident that on the ethanol side of story, we are looking at a very finite, definitive period of time where capacity build will take place, and we will have a very major role to play because we are the leaders in the business.
I said around 14,000 crore rupees for you, as per present estimate of yours.
As I said, whether that 14,000 plays out in 4 years or 6 years, that time will tell. So I will not be able to look into crystal ball over that period. But yes, as those numbers are valid, and we expect that if the current momentum continues, we'll start to see conversions of those numbers happening.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Sheth from Quest Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations Sisir Bhai and Sachin on excellent performance, and I believe the traction which we were expecting has started, from this quarter end. Now, Sisir Bhai, I have a question on the domestic side on this CBG, where in CBG we have, OMC is one of the largest, key player in the whole ecosystem, and we have with this rain gas process, we have got an order from HPCL. So if you can elaborate where there are also a lot of byproducts, so how do we perceive this order, and how do really benefit us in over a period of time? And so that second thing, on the engineering, which was a small piece of the business so far, has now started contributing, and where we have taken a lot of action in the past. And third, you in your opening remark stated on the rate to policy. So if you can elaborate a little more on that.
Sorry, Bharat Bhai, I didn't get the third question.
See, in your opening remark, you stated on this rate to policy in the euro.
Yeah. Okay. So Bharat Bhai, on the CBG supply chain ecosystem developing, I think it's very, very important. it will have to be demonstrated over time. OMCs will remain a very important player in the whole chain because they, at the retail end of the supply chain, they are the ones who the actual vehicle users will connect with, IMU. But CBG is also finding a very big traction now with the CGD network as they are built over a period of time. The city gas distribution systems will So CBG chain on the supply side, OMCs will have a big growth to play on the retail side, the CGD network coming into play. I think we will see, and that's what I was mentioning earlier as well, that the ecosystem development is critical for any product to reach its end consumers or targeted consumers. And I think we are learning that that is something that will happen. The push is in the right direction, but then it will take some time to build, but it will definitely be moving the direction. On the engineering part of business, as you mentioned, we have been talking about it, that the zero liquid discharge business of ours, Praj High Purity Systems, these are the businesses that are really beginning to gain traction now, because there's also an equally big concern now. The regulations are there. The corporates are more aware. They are more conscious about not letting out any effluent liquid out of their operations. And I think all of that, if we look at it from those perspectives, I think it's very, very important part of many process plants, the large industry, to set up zero liquid discharge systems. And I think that is where we have a significant role to play. We are also beginning to see good traction building up, as I was mentioning about Praj High Purity System business, where we have been focusing on complex injectables as a space to hone our offering over a period of time. And with the advent of the vaccine capacities in the country, and we are part of many of those efforts now, we are seeing a good traction build on complex injectable space and vaccine space, and our play therein as well. So good times going forward for PHS as well. Moving to Red 2, brewery, currently not much can be said. We have a dominant position in the business, but right now the business itself is not moving because of the it is a pandemic impacted industry. So as and when it comes back, surely we will have the role to play there as well. And there we are also focusing right now, as I was mentioning, on the Africa as a market, because that's where we see some capacity build taking place, and we are beginning to see attraction build there as well. So overall, CPS business, as I mentioned, we have been investing into our relationship with some leading organizations in the world and some of the big players in the respective industrial segments. And we are expecting the story to turn as we move forward in the future period. On the Red 2 policy, as I had mentioned, we expect, because of the pandemic, it got delayed, the rollout got delayed. But it is now expected that in this summer, we will see the rollout taking place for Red 2 policy. What it fundamentally says is that moving forward, all the future blending will be focused on cellulosic ethanol or second generation ethanol. So obviously, a lot of capacities will have to come up. We are already in dialogue with a few organizations there who are thinking slightly ahead of the curve and who are talking about setting up capacities. So as and when that development takes concrete shape, we will definitely brief you. But that's a big opportunity, and we expect that over the next 10 to 15 years, almost 30 to 40 plants will come up of different capacities to address that opportunity in European market space.
Sorry, Sisir, to disturb you, but I mean, my question was this order from OMC itself based on this rice straw based this thing, and where there are a lot of other byproducts are also. So how do we really see this order, I mean, over a longer term playing out for us? What exactly it can, I mean, demonstrate for Praj?
So, Bharat bhai, two things. There are two basic feedstocks for, as we know today, and there will be more as we move forward. But as we know today, one is the press mud that comes out of the sugar mills. And the second is the rice straw in a big way. There are other agricultural residues as well and other waste, but I'm saying these are two big ones that we see. Others will also start to add to the queue. It was important for somebody to set up a rice straw waste plant. It's not there anywhere in the world. Somebody had to put up a plant. It was a competitive bid that we did for. There was other companies that were competing, and we won the contract because of the fact that we were able to showcase a much higher performance on rice straw. We'll have to build that. It is under construction, and not construction, it's under execution right now. But sometimes in the first quarter of the next calendar year, we will see that plant come to commissioning. And then it will be a clearly demonstrated proof of what can happen out of rice straw.
If that happens, already there's a big movement right now out of state of Punjab, where Punjab Energy Development Authority has already awarded several contracts and tenders and licenses for rice straw based gas production. So we do see a good traction build up over the year on that one. And I think once because the feedstock is abundant, which is a good part, and that to me is the critical dimension. So I think what's important is to stay focused on the opportunity, make sure that we have the right installations and references, and we work with the leaders in the field. And we are working with several other different kind of players. There are ESG funds, there are renewable development companies, there are individual entrepreneurs. There are very, very different dynamics of the customers who are going to put up the CBG plants. Different dynamics for people who will eventually sell the CBG, because that obviously is a very different ballgame, the CBG networks and the all marketing companies, retail outlets and things like that. So that is why I said that this is an ecosystem under development. That's not the case for ethanol, right? The ecosystem already exists in a very, very defined way, but that's a very old industry as well. So we expect that as the ecosystem starts to take roots, this opportunity will also start to take shape in a good way.
Thank you very much for this elaborate answer and all the best.
Thank you, Bharat.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sandeep from AskSandeepSabharwal.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Joshi. Yeah, I just want to understand that for a similar size plant, let's say like LBD plant, with feedstock as either sugary or starchy based feedstock or cellulosic, a similar size plant, what could be the cost differentials in them? Like, what would be the benchmark? I don't know whether you covered it earlier or not.
You mean to say how much will it cost to set up 100 KLPD sugary versus starchy plant? Is that the question?
Yeah, sugary, starchy, or the second generation cellulosic based.
So let me the first tell you. So on sugary based feedstock, because it is captive feedstock, the dynamics are a little different. As opposed to starchy, because starchy is not a captive feedstock for any most of the people. It's not a captive feedstock. So different dynamics there in terms of handling, etc. So cellulosic, of course, is well. Also, the capacities are different. So, for example, if you look at a sugary base, now the capacities are going up because of the scale factors are coming into play. But, you know, there are plants at 60-100 KLPD kind of capacities. But we don't expect ethanol and starch combination to be at that level. We expect that the more plants, there will always be a small capacity plant built because of different considerations. Like, for example, now many sugar companies are also saying that, can I have a bolt-on model for using starchy feedstock in the non-sugar season, non-seasonal period. I'll run up the plant at the seasonal part, and then in the non-seasonal part do I. So they're also, then they can decide either to turn down the capacity or can keep, build the same capacity bolt-on on the grain plant as well. So they use some of the infrastructure that exists for the sugary plant as well. So there are different combinations. I will not be in a position to give you a number saying, you know what, 100 KLPD is X and for sugar and Y for starch. That may not be the right way to look at it because there are very different considerations to this dynamics.
But can we say that for a starch-based plant, the costing will be higher than for a sugary one?
That is correct. That is generally speaking correct.
And when do you think your first of the second generation plants will start producing?
I had mentioned that we are completing this in second quarter of next calendar year, and by third quarter of next calendar year, it will be commissioned.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gautam Rathi from TWC Advisor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. So I just wanted to understand, so if you look at your revenue overall, and as we understand your revenue, it mainly has two components. One is basically the capex part, which the customer does. And then there is some, which is basically the revenue recurring item, which is basically, say, the AMCs as well as the consumables which we sell to them, right? So if you can just give us some color, what would be the mix in the capex and the consumable part? Like if I take your revenue of this quarter of, say, 600 crores, what would be the mix? And if you can give us some examples as to what kind of consumables are these, in what processes these goes, how is it, or what would the AMC revenue share in case of a CBG plant. So if you can just give us some, you know, brief understanding, that would be great.
Awesome. Could you just elaborate your second question again? So the first one I understood.
On the second part, if you can just help us understand what would be the, so if you get a CBG project of a 35 crore or a 40 crore, what do you think would be the future AMC probability for that, what we would get, right? Say, maybe a crore rupee worth AMC contract just for maintaining those plants. So if you can just help us understand.
Okay, so... On the first part, so I don't probably have I'm understanding the spirit of the question, saying what business, what part of your business is addressing customers' revenue side of expense as opposed to capex side, if I understand your question
correctly. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So if at a very broad level, today the revenue side of business for us today is off the order of maybe 5 to 6% of our sales. It's not a large number.
Okay, fair.
7%, right. seven and thereabout.
Yeah,
it's about that number. We are understanding that maybe there is a very different way of focusing on this business and increase this business. That's what we will. That's one of our plan steps as to how do we do that. Because we have realized that if we position it differently, it adds tremendous value to our customers, and I think from there we should be able to move it forward. In terms of the 35 crore plant that, or any CBG plant that we'll put up, what are the future AMC revenues? I think it depends. I'm sorry to use this word depends, but what the feedstock is, so different feedstocks may have different potential. But typically, each of these plants can represent to us a potential revenue potential of depending maybe a crore of rupees, 2 crores, 1.5 crores in that range per plant per year.
Okay. And also, can you just help us understand, so there is this biosyrup technology, right? So we understand in that technology also, you also add some consumables which you give it to your customer, right? Is it correct?
Yes.
And is it a very large component, because you have to store this syrup for a longer time, right? Because these are generated over 3-4 months and you have to store it for the whole year or say 9 months. So, is it a large component, this consumable?
So the storage that is required is to ensure that the syrup does not degrade. Okay. We have to ensure that when we take it, because during the season, nothing happens. The post-season, as you rightly said, after 5 months of sugar season are over, and if I'm trying to produce ethanol in the 11th month of the sugar season, then... how does the syrup behave? And I think in order to ensure that this whole feedstock is unadulterated, is still at its good quality, it is still able to produce the feedstock in a good sense of way. So it depends on what capacity of syrup you put up. And there are many dimensions with which part of the country are putting it up, how many months of sugar season that is there. And I think the first plant that we are... demonstrating at a commercial scale is currently they finished the syrup storage, so the bio syrup making, and now they will start to use it over a period of time. So we'll have some more information as we move forward through the year on that one, and then probably I'll be able to share that with you.
Okay, fair enough. Just I can have one follow-up question on this. So how are you looking at this part of the revenue, which is basically the more on the OPEX side? Over the next 3, 5 or maybe 10 years, how do you look at it? So are you planning to, you know, scale this up, and are there some efforts being taken on this part?
So I think what we are seeing now with this increased activity and the role of microbes or microbiology into this whole value chain, a lot of opportunities will open up for us, and we are cognizant of that. And I think we have decided we will start to work on creating a very focused business around, if I can use the service side or revenue side of customers model. There are three levers that we want to use. One is, of course, entire
these microbiology-led additives, performance enhancers, and that dimension into the business. The second is going to be the O&M services that we provide to our customers. And the third is we have launched a very ambitious program for digitalization, where we will be able to bring a remote performance monitoring and enhancement system to our customers, where we will be able to look at different dimensions of plant performance and go on a proactive fashion to customers and say, you can intervene, we can stop this failure from happening, or we can keep the bottleneck base, or we can stop this cost from leaking from this point, and so on. So there'll be a whole host of services that will emanate out of this. So these three we will combine and take it forward as a very focused business vertical as we move forward during the time frame that you mentioned.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saket Kapoor from Kapoor & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Dhanyavaad, sir, for the opportunity. Sir, as you told that the way forward would be the starchy-based ethanol rather than the sugary-based. So how are these existing, sir, potable alcohol players your prospective clients, and what kind of retrofications are applicable in case in their plant, so that they can simultaneously produce or they can shift to ethanol direct instead of the ENA trajectory, since it attracts a lot of state levies? So how does this math hold, sir, understanding?
No, I think the portable ethanol alcohol is a very different segment. ENA segment is very different. There is a definitive market out there. Right now, a bit subdued because of the lockdowns and things like that, but otherwise, very definitive market out there. So there will be people who will keep on serving this segment, and I think there is a definitive market and there's a definitive demand, so I'm sure they'll find a price point. It's pretty aggressive right now. So that's number one. I think number two, which is equally important, is the ethanol production out of starchy feedstock, and that's a different cup of tea. So I don't know whether an ENA producer would like to stop producing ENA and go to ethanol production, but there are a lot of projects that are coming up where people are asking for both, saying, okay, I want also ENA as well as ethanol, and that our technology permits. So depending on where they are.
My question was that only, the existing potable alcohol players having the feasibility can easily go for the same, because they have the speed stock ready and the experience with them. So that is a good proposition for them.
Yes. So as I said, it depends on their contracts with the, because as you can surmise, the end users or their customers, what kind of contracts they have with them, what capacities they have to serve. So, but if they want, they can add a section to the plant that will allow them to produce ethanol. They can also, when they set up a new plant capacity also, you can think in those having both possibilities.
Okay, because of the procurement, the procurement is assured by the OMCs. I'm just talking about the EBP 223, which you are elaborating to.
Yeah.
So
yes,
procurement is there, and since you have told that geographically only the three parts, there are only three states contributing maximum amount of the starchy part, the sugary part. So any potable alcohol player having the grounds can come up with a starchy capacity. That could be a good feasibility for them.
Yeah, what you're saying is valid. So they obviously, their experience of handling the whole starchy feedstock and the management of thereof, and so they understand that. I think you're very, very, very correct. As engineers speak, technically the plans for ethanol and the ENA are slightly different at some stage onwards. There's commonality, and then there's some state they differ. But you're right, the experience will come in very handy, so they can all be the future ethanol producers as well.
Right.
And that's what I was alluding to, that the industry structure will change. Today, ethanol production is dominated by sugar companies. As we move forward, the industry structure is set to change. It will, there will be another new players that will come in, especially on the starchy side of the feedstock. The developers, the ESG funds, the renewable energy development companies, many, many other OMCs, the ENA producers. So they're very different set of customers who will come into the play, and it will no longer be only sugar producers who will be producing ethanol.
Yes. Last point on this order booking part, sir. 1770 is the order book as on the event date. So, sir, taking into account the execution cycle, the second half generally looks the bulky one in our engineering as an organization, and the first half is slightly more sober. So, sir, is this the same trend line as depending upon the execution which you are going to do for the first half, or this time the screwing up will look rather tapering off than the which was for the last year? Just to have an understanding on that.
No, great question, Saket. So we don't want that the steep curve that we have to climb every time. That's not a good idea, because then we end up using our resources inefficiently. But this time our focus is to even it out as much as we can. I'm not saying that we will even it out completely. That's not possible. Because also we are in a growing demand arena. But yes, it is much more smoother than it has been in the past, if I can use that word.
Right, sir. And order addition for the last quarter, sir, if you could quantify just for the January, February, March quarter, how much have been the net order addition out of the total order?
For the last quarter, total order intake was 650 crores.
650 crores, and we have an execution of 560.
540, yes. Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Shishirji, dhanyavaad aapka, sir, and thank you, sir, for
thank you, Saket. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Saketji.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kedar from Fortress Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is in terms of the overall ecosystem, and in particular about the feedstock availability for either CBG or ethanol. So is the feedstock available continuously, and is there any issue in procuring the feedstock, and what is the cost of the feedstock for either CBG and ethanol projects? So that would be my first question.
So for ethanol, the feedstock supply chain is very well established. So because the sugar mills do continue to get the sugar cane and there onwards. And now, as you are mentioning, from an ethanol, if I just look at it from an ethanol perspective, the feedstock definitions have changed. What used to be only a molasses C, where all the sugar is extracted and then what is left was given for ethanol production. Now, lots and lots of sugar companies are also opting for making the juice and then taking it directly to ethanol production without sugar production in between. So different companies have different strategies depending on their market and their understanding of their product mix requirement. So that's one change that is happening, that we are seeing a lot more syrup-based capacities that are coming up for ethanol as opposed to only molasses C-based. Molasses D already, a lot of capacity is moved to that. So different feedstocks there. So for them, the pricing is decided based on what is the the FRP for or MSP for sugarcane, and there onwards the whole blockchain. On the grain side, it has already specified the grain prices ex-SCI go downs, and there's a corresponding ethanol price. If you don't buy from there and buy in the open market, then there's a different pricing. So different strokes, different feedstocks, different sources, different ethanol price points.
Okay, thank you, sir. And my second question would be, in the HPCL project and the Godavari biorefinery project that you have done, could you please share the contract value in rupee terms? And also for the HPCL project that can produce about 5,000 tons of CBG by processing 35,000 metric tons of feedstock, so that is about 15% gas yield. And I also read that IOCL has set up a CBG plant in the south, in Tamil Nadu. So that can produce 15 tons of CBG from 290 tons of feedstock per day. So that is about 5% of gas yield. So is it true, or is it right to say that your technology, that is the RenGas technology, can produce maybe double of what the other technology can? Or am I wrong in my calculation?
So rather than making a bold statement saying we are double to everybody else, we are saying yes, the numbers that you gave does show that, and we are very confident of what we will produce. It is from our understanding really a benchmark yield, because nobody, no one is anywhere near us. There are other technologies which are slightly better than the one that you mentioned. But overall, our process is very, very efficient. And that is what I was mentioning in my earlier answer to one of the questions, that once that gets established at a commercial scale on the ground, then probably it will completely change the dynamics of this this space. We have to wait for that. Right now, we are able to demonstrate this, we are able to claim this, we are able to guarantee this. But people sometimes also want to see it, right? So the see part, also we are running a demonstration plant here in R&D, which is a reasonable size, where we will be able to showcase to customers. But right now, of course, there are a lot of restrictions on travel, etc. So people are not able to travel. But other than that, yes, we are very confident that our technology is absolutely and by a long margin best-in-class yield.
Okay. And so could you share the contract value for the HPCL and Godavari projects in terms of rupees?
No, we are not at liberty to do that.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Agam Shah, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on a good set of numbers. So, most of my questions are answered, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nimish Sheikh from GT Advisory. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir, and congratulations for an excellent quarter. My question is also on the CBG. You could not share the value of the contract. Could you give us an idea of what revenue such a project can generate? Just a ballpark number for the person who puts up such a project. 5,000 tons of gas and the subsequent biofertilizers. Approximate.
I don't have a calculator in front of me, so sorry for that. It's about 46 to 47 rupees a kilo is the gas price. Okay. You will, whatever revenue you get, about 50% of the revenue will come from byproducts. So that you can add to that. That's the rough number.
Sorry, how much is the, will come from byproducts?
30% of the gas revenue.
30%. Okay, understood. Perfect. So thank you so much. Thank you. That was it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohan Advant from MultiAct. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. So thanks for the opportunity. So my question was on CBG, a very basic question, and please pardon my ignorance. Sir, when we talk about CBG, can the existing distribution network be used for CBG? And in terms of end users, be it automobiles, be it CNG, or be it industrial use of gas, can our CBG be used for all those end users? Do, you know, cars need to be modified? So how is this ecosystem on an downstream basis? You know, I understand the upstream sort of feedback, feedstock led issue, but on a distribution basis, how is this ecosystem current?
Yes, Rohan. So all CNG can. CBG can go and substitute entire CNG. So that's one-to-one substitution, no problem at all. The second is CBG is a more efficient form of CNG. So in whichever application you are using CNG, if you use CBG, you are likely to get about 10% higher efficiency compared to what you get with CNG. So that's the second part. The third, when we were talking to ONCs, they made us understand that it takes about 6 to 12 months for an ecosystem to develop around it. But once the gas starts to become available, people start to convert their vehicles because it is very cheap. You pay nearly 90 bucks, 80, 90 bucks for diesel at the pump. This is at 55, 56 in that range. So there's a clear distinction between the rate that you paid for diesel versus gas. So that pushes a lot of people. And the conversion kits come up. They are limited by the use and availability, sorry, not use, but availability of the gas, and with the CBG coming to different locations, very localized, I think a lot more churn is expected and the speed is expected in conversion as well.
Okay, so an existing CNG car can be filled with CBG?
Yes, you should actually. It's more efficient. It's much more efficient than CNG. You get more mileage, which is critical to every Indian user, right? It gives 10% more.
Yeah. Sir, and just lastly, when you sized up the opportunity over the next, 5 years or, whatever time it takes to get to 20% lending, which is 14,000 crores, is that the market size and we'll get a market share of that, or is that the size for charging?
Sorry, could you please repeat? I couldn't hear the question clearly.
Sir, when you sized up the opportunity as 14,000 crores, that is the potential, revenue that, 20% lending will create. Is that the market potential and Praj will get a market share of that, or is that an opportunity that Praj can generate?
No. This is the size of the market that we can address.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Those were my two questions. All the best. And thanks for
answering. Thank you. Thank you, Rohan.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Levin Shah from ValueQuest Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations on wonderful set of numbers. So my first question is on this order booking. What we have seen, you have been alluding to this in past few quarters, that inquiry levels have gone up substantially, and they were in fact double versus what we had previously. And if you look at our order book during this quarter, that is reflecting the same in the numbers now. So we have received around 550 crores of order from bioenergy versus 200-250 crores quarterly run rate that we were doing. So do we feel that this number, that inquiry translating into order book has already started happening from this quarter, and going forward this trend should continue?
Yes, that is our expectation, because if all of these factors are true, that we have to have 20% lending by 25, that means 1,000 crore liters, that means 400 plants sanctioned by government, feed above stocks, feed stocks, and therefore so many inquiries, and people are rushing to put up the capacity because the demand is definitely there. Yes, it should.
Okay. Sir, and my second question is on margins again. So we all know that commodity inflation is something which will impacting everybody, and also at the same time, if you look at our business mix, our exports share as a percentage of total is going down. So do we see that margins overall will remain at the same level, or is there any scope for improvement from here on?
So Levin, as you rightly said, it's a mixed bag. What happens to how fast, it's not that we are shrinking export market, it's just that domestic is suddenly seeing a big boom. That's number one. Number two, as we go to the starchy feedstocks, we expect our margins will get better in domestic market as well. Okay, compared to sugary feedstock. So that's the second one. Third is what happens to the mix of at what different moment time, size of project, capacity of the project, different dimensions, and of course the commodity prices. So no company can be left untouched if there's a steep price hike, right? And to some extent, over a period of time, we will be able to absorb and manage it and pass it on to our customers. But there could be a brief period of few contracts where we will not be able to do that. So maybe in short term, commodity prices, we may not be able to pass on to our customers. In long term, definitely yes.
Okay. Sir, and last question is on this Godavari order that we have received. We have announced that order in the month of April, so that is not part of our existing order book as on March, right?
No, it is. It is.
Okay, we have announced that in the month of April, so I thought that would...
No, the order was for the March itself. Announcement came in the April first week, yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so that is already reflecting in our current order.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajesh Patari from Alpha Accurate Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thanks for providing the opportunity, sir. I have two questions. First is, you mentioned that total current ethanol capacity in the country is about 350 crore liters. And also you mentioned somewhere that you have added 100 liter and let's assume competitor about 45. So that comes to 145 crore liter. So are we trying to say that 1 year back the total ethanol capacity in the country was only, 200 crore liter?
No. What I said was the current capacity that we are
able to supply off the order of 350 crore liters, 350 to 400 crore liters, off the order. Currently, the supply is already there, so it's being produced in the country. And what I said was that another, if I look at my order book, what orders I booked in the last financial year, and I convert all of that to capacity on the ground, that will add 100 crore liter capacity to, on the ground. And if you look at market share dynamics, and I think, okay, if we got 100, our competition, all of them put together will be about 40 crore. So country has contracted for setting up, adding capacity of 140 crore liters on ground to the existing capacity. What we need to add is 1,000 crore liters. So that's the numbers.
What is it? The current installed capacity is 350 crore, am I right?
Yeah, roughly correct.
So 350 crore you are saying is existing capacity plus 140 crore already ordered during last 12 months or so.
And total another 1,000 needs to get added. Not total, another 1,000, delta capacity.
Another 1,000, is it? Okay. Yes. So basically, got it. And, you know, second question is for 1 crore liter, what is the typical opportunity size for us?
Sorry, I couldn't catch your question.
I mean, for, you know, 1 crore liter capacity, what is the typical size of order for us if 1 crore liter is the capacity?
No, that is difficult for me to answer. Reason being, I don't know the, it depends on what the stream. So is it molasses C, is it B, is it syrup, is it grain? Different capacities, different feedstocks plus brownfield versus greenfield, debottlenecking. There are many factors that go to decide the capacity per liter. So that would be a difficult number for me to give out.
Okay. But, you know, putting in reverse, 1,000 crores.
Yeah, but what you said is this 1,000 crore liter is about 14,000 crore opportunity for the company to address.
Understood. Sir, my second question is, you know, this, you know, the engineering business, pardon again for my ignorance, but, you know, this business is, so you have a bioenergy and so this ethanol thing, what you are right now talking about, that goes into bioenergy, right?
Sorry, come again?
This opportunity of 14,000 crores, what we are talking about,
yes,
and also
yes,
the 120
yes.
crore, whatever, you know, the last year what we have booked, that segment goes into which segment, bioenergy or engineering?
That's the bioenergy. That's bioenergy.
Okay, understood. So how do you see the scope of the engineering segment over the next 2-3 years?
That's what I was mentioning in earlier answer, that we are looking at a progressive growth there as well. The zero liquid discharge systems, we are very positive and optimist about the fact that that is something that will get built up. Our Praj high purity system, which is serving this whole vaccination and complex injectable change in the pharmaceutical space, that is looking at a decent growth territory. We are looking at our CPES business, which serves the customers, large engineering and technology companies outside India. They are on a decent path. So those are the engineering businesses, except brewery, which currently we said that because of the situation in the country, we don't expect new capacities to be built, at least not in the foreseeable future. So that's the one that will take a little time to build up. Otherwise, all of them are on a decent track.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thanks everyone for your time today. In case you have any more questions, you can write us at info@praj.net. Once again, thanks a lot for your time and have a nice day. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Praj Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your line.